This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The views and opinions of Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris should not be taken too seriously,
especially when they give advice.
Do not take Marshall's analogies literally,
especially when it comes to Russell Dorsey.
The sports thoughts of Rahimi and Harris may change at any time. Remember, it's just sports.
Okay, thanks, bye. Bye.
Rahimi and Harris, 10 to 2 on 670.
Mark Grody in for Layla Rahimi. And Mark, you ready for that victory lap yet? I'm just waiting.
It was nice to have some recorded validation.
First of all, the Cubs
are putting the Cardinals away this weekend. See, I told Robbie, write that down. Robbie wrote it down and he made it. Are you worried about those Cardinals, are you?
See, it sounds so much better now than it did when you guys were mocking me.
And I don't like being mocked.
This team specifically right now is in the driver's seat in the NL Central. It feels like they're good to go. So much so that I'm willing to say that perhaps the Cubs can stay in first place for the rest of the regular season. That was not my stance a week ago.
I know.
You started to think about the things that I say. I think that's what was going on with you in truth, Marshall. You were like, that Grody, boy, he's in my head, man. The Cubs are not going to step out of first place.
Well, you're always on my mind. You're always on my mind. It's like, well, what would Mark Grody think about this?
You ain't my bitch.
Okay.
Looks good, Grody. Morning, Grody. Looks good on you. Looks good on me. Morning, Molly.
Bears.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hello, happy Tuesday to you. We broadcast live from the Score Sunday Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You can text us 312-644-6767. You can also call us when our lines are open at the same number. You can join us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score, thanks to our video producers, Connor O'Donnell and Jacob Stutz. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score. Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi. Ray Diaz is our producer, as is Robbie Triano. Tyler Ferengirl is hanging out and helping out. And so is Brandon Fryer. And as we hurdle toward the All-Star break next week.
Well, I don't like hurdling because I could trip and fall and scrape my knee or something. Just break something.
Let's be honest. Walking can be dangerous at times. Coasting is usually when you get caught sleeping.
Don't walk with your phone out, I can tell you that.
So we hurdle toward the All-Star break.
Let's do it.
But I want to point out that before I think we get to what I think is a possible snub, and that's in our next segment, the credit that baseball has given to Michael Busch and what he has done to help become the National League co-player of the week shows you his value and his progress. Because we have said from the very beginning of this season that you ideally did not want to have to platoon him, especially given how much the Cubs have invested in him. And then also what your offensive expectation is out of your infield specifically relative to other playoff teams in the National League. So to see what he has done, batting .500, the slash line is ridiculous. Over six games with that homestand, .585, .615, .1174, 13 for 23. Has he finally made it to the point where, especially when he did face lefty starting pitching, that we can say, okay, this guy has finally built up enough of a profile and enough of a resume that you don't have to platoon him as much, and he should be regular in the lineup. The National League Player of the Week nod, I think, as well, even though it's co, was Zach Wheeler, who was just mowing everybody down, including the Cubs when he faced them, is still quite the nod.
I say this, Layla. I've been in the Michael Busch should play every day thing for about, 2 months now? I think Craig Counsell has finally caught up with the rest of us. I think the majority of people, whether you're a Cubs fan or not, just baseball observers have been like, why isn't this guy in the lineup every day? And you could say he faces some tough lefties and you don't want to mess up his psyche. But I point to what he did last year and the fact that he had a higher batting average against lefties last year than he did righties. That was his first full season in the majors. Craig Counsell slow walked it, but he's finally gotten to, I think, where the rest of us are. Everybody else noticed it. The MLB office, clearly with the co-player of the week, because who he's sharing that with kind of tells you how far he's come. This is a major step, not only for the Cubs to play him against two left-handed starting pitchings the last time that they faced left-handed starters, but also to have him in the same gravity as a guy like Zach Wheeler tells me all I need to know about where baseball sees Michael Bush.
Before the Cardinals drubbing on Sunday Night Baseball, and it's always a nice thing to do to be able to shine on the Sunday Night Baseball stage. We saw that with PCA earlier in the season when he performed well in LA against the Dodgers. But before that game, he had already become first on the team in OPS at 939 and weighted runs created plus at 162, which is, I think that is statistically significant when you consider matching the eye test with matching the hits of significance and how you measure the value to this team. So when you put it all together, I think it's basically a rubber stamp from Major League Baseball saying, Michael Bush has earned this. He's earned the honor, even though it doesn't sound like maybe a big deal in the grand scheme of things. I still think when you measure the progress and how he started out and how he's still being platoon, you know, it's not like there's some announcements that has been made. I still expect to see Justin Turner start every now and then. So because of that, I think it's a nice progress check for everybody observing the Cubs as they try to get something together, especially when the trade deadline is ahead of us, and so is that All-Star break.
I think the question becomes, Michael Bush, as an everyday starter, does that mean, one, Justin Turner's going to stay on this roster for the rest of the season? Will there be an upgrade at first base as far as the backup right-handed bat? And if so, will that affect Michael Bush maybe staying in more of a platoon-type role? I think right now you're getting just as good of at-bats, if not better, from Michael Bush facing left-handed pitching as you are Justin Turner. And I think that's where we are right now with it.
And sometimes you really do have to go back to the numbers, too. You have to go back to what the value of players are, especially on a Cubs team where they talk to you about their spending. You know, one of the notes that I keep as a reference point in our Google Doc that we have where we update it every day for our show is Justin Turner's contract, because I think it's important to keep that in mind. Goodness knows the front office is. $6 million, one-year deal. Turner can earn an additional $2 million in bonuses this year, $1.5 million for plate appearances. Mm-hmm. Not that anybody's trying to keep somebody from earning that money if they've truly earned it.
But you got to earn your spot.
And $500,000 for time on the active roster. He would also receive a $500,000 assignment bonus if he's traded. I don't see him getting traded.
Could you see him getting released?
No, especially based on what I just read.
Oh, so you're saying you think that the Cubs are here to help him accomplish those bonuses as opposed to upgrading their roster and moving a guy like him and maybe Vidal Brujan to make better players on their roster as they make a postseason push?
No, I think they're going to do it as necessary. But I think sometimes when you're wondering why he might be getting certain chances, don't question how the team viewed and valued him. There are some teams where you say, yeah, you can tell that if there's especially with pitching, I feel like it comes up if you make a certain amount of starts, that they will sometimes prevent you from getting that start, or vice versa.
It's a dirty
game.
Will
do you a solid and you'll get the start so you can earn the bonus. In this case, it's plate appearances, but $1.5 million for plate appearances, that is a lot. I wonder how much, how many plate appearances it has to be. And I'm not necessarily pitting Turner against Bush, but when you make somebody have a deal like that, when you offer them that deal and you negotiate it, it does make me wonder about how much you want to use him and how much you're planning to based on how much you spent. Like, you know, they don't throw that kind of money around is what I'm trying to say.
Well, they could save themselves some money and bonuses if he doesn't get there. And if it coincides with them making their roster better, which we will know by the end of the month, I don't think anyone's going to be complaining except for maybe Justin Turner. And Justin Turner has to realize, as he knows, he's not a spring chicken. The decline is real. He's been maybe playing too much, and he hasn't produced in the opportunities he's getting to a consistent enough rate. And especially when you're talking about Michael Bush, you're talking about someone who leads the major leagues in OPS since the start of June. That's a real stat.
Absolutely.
And so you look at Craig Counsell saying, okay, he's been locked in. Let me use him more and more and more. And eventually the extra space that Justin Turner resided in, mm-hmm. it's going to disappear. And it should disappear because you're trying to win games. And I said yesterday, Layla, the ultimate goal here is not just to get to the playoffs. It's to earn a top two seed and keep it moving.
It is. And I think that that's fair. That should be your goal. You should not only want to win your division. You should want to be able to say, we'll go toe-to-toe against the best teams in the best league in baseball. And that's the National League. I feel like all of that is fair. And I don't think Justin Turner's some guy who's going to fight for his time. Like, everybody talks about how much of a value he is in that clubhouse. They always have that type of person. You get that veteran presence who you appreciate, who you respect. I don't necessarily think that there's some sort of conflict there. That's not what I'm trying to say.
Oh, no.
I'm just pointing out that this is how the Cubs value him. This is Rahimi and Harris on the Score. Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi, and you talking about Michael Busch getting the National League Player of the Week. Let's listen to Craig Counsell earlier talk about how Busch is getting noticed by the rest of baseball.
You know, well, it's interesting. It's like the nature of how he kind of performs the last 2 days. You know, I think of the big exciting game. You know, makes everybody kind of take notice, because otherwise it's just like the he had a home run this week. He hit 280 with a 380 on base and a whatever 500 slug, and it's like, but it's just kind of like nicely spaced out, right? So it's great. I mean, maybe it'd take a big game like that to kind of put him on everybody's map.
I appreciate Craig Counsell saying what we are all seeing. So for me, that is something where when you put it together, I feel like everybody's backing up the eye test in a different way. You know, not only do you have you, not only do you have me watching the games, your manager is pointing this out. He's rewarding you with playing time. And then not just that, but Major League Baseball says, yeah, we see what you're doing. It's you and Zach Wheeler, though, because Zach Wheeler is, we're getting awards now for, like, guys going five innings, and Zach Wheeler's like, nah, let me give you a complete game.
Zach Wheeler had
good company to be in.
He had, in his last start, he goes the distance, right, and he gives up the one run, or the no run, and he was just phenomenal, the fact that no Philly starter had ever put up the numbers he put up in that start. And we're talking about, go back beyond like the last time they won the World Series with Cole Hamels as their ace. We're talking about Steve Carlton. We're talking about Roy Halladay as a Philly. We're talking about guys who were just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And here is Zach Wheeler in his mid-30s saying, I still got a lot of gas left in the tank. And that is a scary playoff rotation in the making if we're talking about the Philadelphia Phillies. So I think that should be the standard bearer for the Cubs, and they're probably happy they don't have to deal with them anymore. And Michael Busch, it'd be interesting to see what they would do if they faced the Phillies in a short series. If they would go and say, hey, there's lefties out here. Jesus Luzardo, good luck, Michael Busch.
Better prepare. That is the reason we talk so much about a lot of the series that we've seen so far this season, is because when you're facing excellent opponents, when you have these series, the Twins are not that serious, I'm sorry to inform you. But when it comes to either your division rivals even, or the series that we talk about, whether it's facing the Phillies or perhaps the Yankees coming up, even though the Yankees are in a bit of a slump.
Might be catching them at the right time.
You're still measuring the quality of your team based on potential playoff opponents. This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. But either way, to me, it's just, I like pointing out the positives when you have them and then proof of what you're seeing. That's when it gets good. That's when you can see real improvement.
One of the texters on the text line, yeah, keep texting us. We'd like to hear from you. 630, unless the Cubs trade for a new legit starting third baseman, I think Turner stays on the roster. I don't agree with that. I think they could find a way to get a better third baseman that's not even a starter, just a backup right-handed bench player that maybe plays first and third, who's better than Justin Turner.
You want two starters and a third baseman and a partridge in a pear tree. I just don't know that they necessarily have all of the farm supply for that. By the way, speaking of farm supply and trades, our stalking segment continues at 1 o'clock today. we were focusing on Mitch Keller of the Pittsburgh Pirates, who might also not be selling now. We've still got to figure that part of it out.
That is ludicrous, but I hear him. I hear him.
Okay, so according to SpotRac, Justin Turner's contract, 2025, $6 million payroll annual, $6 million toward the luxury tax, cash annual $4 million, cash cumulative $4 million. So it's not necessarily like it's a bigger hit or something if you decide to release, but either way, those are at least the numbers. And I'm not trying to say it's like Michael Bush versus Justin Turner. I'm just saying that this is how the Cubs value him. I also just appreciate the simple text from 219. Teams need to dictate the situation. Don't let your opponent dictate what you do. I believe in that too. Have some main character energy. And I feel like Michael Bush, you're at least the co-main character of the week in the National League.
With Justin Turner specifically, I think we also should point out that when you're looking at Michael Bush specifically, understand that man's making under $800,000 this year. He's under club control for another couple of seasons. He starts arbitration in 2027. We've been talking a lot about contract extensions. Get that man. If he continues to do what he has done and is decent against left-handed pitching as he gets more opportunities, getting him a contract might be a priority this offseason.
Also, the texter points out that you're monitoring the trade regarding Jackson Ferris. I'm in on that, too. I feel you on that. Speaking of Michael Bush, keep listening to our show all this week for your chance to win a pair of tickets to Baseball After Dark at Wildfire in Glenview on Wednesday, July 23rd, featuring our special guest, one, Michael Bush. Baseball After Dark is presented by Huntington Bank. Life is a masterpiece. Make your money story a bestseller. And by Wildfire. You know them. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating wonderful memories. Coming up, we're going to pick up on a segment that we discussed yesterday, or at least you and Mark Grody did, Marshall.
Yeah.
The All-Star Snubs.
Does it matter? Does it not matter? Does Layla think someone's been snubbed?
I don't necessarily know that there were. I might upset a lot of Cubs fans,
but let's
take a look at the numbers and respect them as well. That's next.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Look at Bushy's numbers. Look at Saez's numbers. I mean, Carson Kelly's one of the best catchers in baseball right now. What Nico's doing special. I think the bullpen guys, a couple of bullpen guys that have sub-1 ERAs and a lot of innings thrown. So kind of look across the board. There's a lot of guys who could be representing the Cubs in that game. And like I said, hopefully in the next week, some of those guys will be there.
That was Ian Happ talking about Say Suzuki and the All-Star game. This is Raheemy and Harris on The Score. A lot of good feedback and just discussion on our text line, 312-644-6767. When it came to the previous National League Player of the Week award and the discussion about the improvement of Michael Bush, and we shift gears a little bit. As I mentioned, All-Star break is next week. The All-Star game is as well. We still got programming for you on The Score, by the way. You know, we're doing fun stuff next week. Did you know that?
What kind of fun stuff are we doing, Layla?
We're replaying two of the pivotal games of the 2016 season.
Is it that time where we start talking about 2016 in hopes that 2025 will bring a bit of deja vu?
Well, I mean, we did that already, but if you want to relive the game that sent the Cubs to the World Series and then also Game 7, you can do that next week on The Score, which I think is pretty awesome. So make sure you check that out next week. Pat Hughes on the call, of course, and that was a lot of fun to just at least know that we're going to do that next week. As far as this week is concerned, I know you and Mark Grody talked a lot about All-Star snubs, and that's the good thing when you're talking about a talented team and a talented National League. And I know you made the case for Michael Bush. The guy for me is probably Seiya Suzuki, given that he, as I feel, is still important. Leading the major leagues in RBI to me is still important because it's one thing to have ducks on the pond. It's another thing to get them out of the pond and send them home. Have you tried to keep your ducks in a row? It's not easy. Metaphorically, literally, or in Seiya Suzuki's case, from a hitting standpoint, but he's been answering. I make the case that nobody's actually become their best self this season more than him, thanks in part to having protection in the lineup. But the issue is, it's not just that. I also feel like his extra bases have also been incredibly better this season. He's got 21 doubles, 3 triples, 24 home runs, the 145 OPS. Like, that to me was probably the guy who should be a National League All-Star. The problem is, he plays DH. So does Kyle Schwarber and Shohei Ohtani when he's not pitching.
So what's crazy about this is when you call someone and say they've been snubbed, my immediate response every single time is, tell me who they should replace who's currently been named to that at their position. That's the immediate response. And if you can't give me an overwhelming argument, not a, you know, they're on the same level, but an overwhelming argument, then I'm like, is it a snub or is it just like that position was stacked?
And also it just comes down sometimes to the simplest of statistics, the long ball. Shohei Ohtani has 30 behind Cal Raleigh and only Aaron Judge. Then it's Eugenio Suarez, which I know we've been requested to stalk, and we will do so before the trade deadline. Suarez has 28. Kyle Schwarber has 27. Then it is Seiya Suzuki, who now has 25. So I understand. I understand that sometimes it is simply those numbers, especially at DH, that bear it out. But unfortunately, for Seiya's case, I still think it's a snub given the respective, like, if you look at the blind resume numbers, that's what it is. But is it a snub when you're talking about the National League? Like, that's the issue. The issue is the talent around you.
So you're saying you're okay with Seiya being behind Kyle Schwarber and Shohei Ohtani?
If there was an honorable mention, I'm good with the honorable mention behind one and two.
If either of those guys got hurt between now and next Tuesday, Seiya Suzuki would be selected. I think we're both confident in that.
It's not just that. It's that if that's the company you keep, similar to us talking about Michael Bush and Zach Wheeler, yeah, I'm good with it. I'll take it. That not only gets you into the playoffs, that gets you competing in the playoffs. So I'm good with that every time. If you're comparing those bats and why, and Suzuki's still leading all of them with 77 RBIs compared to Aaron Judge at 74, Cal Raleigh with the same, Eugenio Suarez with the same. Yeah, I'm good with it. Measure a couple of stats and put them together. The OPS is 880. If you told me that past the halfway point of the season, that these would be, say, Suzuki's numbers at the beginning of the year, I'd be thrilled.
But would you be like, oh yeah, that's definitely an all-star?
I would say those are all-star numbers. But the problem is
all-star level numbers, yes.
But the problem is the final bosses of the National League.
Well, maybe the greatest player of all time. I'm not ready to declare that yet. But maybe the greatest player of all time plays your position as well. Let's start with that, with Shohei. You're not going to out... He also led baseball in votes. Like, he's not only better, but he's also more popular. And that's a thing. He's like the most popular player from his country. And he's also the most popular player in baseball because he can hit, he can pitch, he can do everything. He can go 50-50 on you.
Sometimes the merit actually balances the popularity.
And a lot of people, they kicked back at me yesterday because they were like, well, Michael Bush isn't a bigger snub because he's leading the league in RBS. There is precedent for this. You can look down the street, down the red line, if you will, on the south side. Frank Thomas had a year where he was leading the league in RBI at the All-Star break, did not make the All-Star team. I remember when I was in Philly, Ryan Howard leading the league in RBI, did not make the All-Star team.
I believe the year that Jose Abreu led the league in RBI, he did make the All-Star team that year.
No, it's normally if you're doing it. Yeah. But I'm just giving you some examples along with obviously Hank Greenberg, who we talked about a little bit yesterday. It's a thing, but let's not act like it's never happened before. And usually it's who are you going up against? Like I remember for Ryan Howard, it's like, well, that guy Albert Pujols is pretty good.
There are some flaws in the award system in baseball as a whole. Like, for example, many times you're the MVP of the year prior.
Yes.
You get named MVP for not actually the current season, but the one you had the year before. And you can look back in history, especially I think in 2000 to 2010, I feel like you can especially make that argument just with some of the performances there.
Oh, I love
it. Other times, Gold Glove, for some reason, turns into an offensive award. We know that.
That's crazy.
We know that all too well.
It's crazy
how
that works.
Not the case with Ian Happ coming up at 11, but we know that that happens.
779 on the text line. Seiya obviously has a case. Michael Bush's case is just better. Based on the numbers, which he's better than, say, in a lot of categories, except for the raw, like, obviously home runs and RBI, and that Matt Olson made it instead of him, Bush easily should be Freddie Freeman's backup. And you can make a case also that Bush is better than, has been better than Freddie Freeman, but Freddie Freeman's more popular. And also 773, I don't care it's in Atlanta. I don't care Seiya is the DH. He should be on the roster and Acuna should be on vacation. Again, Acuna was voted in by the fans. My whole thing is this. If you get voted in by the fans, you get voted in by the fans. It's a game for the fans. The Cubs had their say. They got two of the outfielders. They had their say. Getting all three of their outfielders or two and a DH, you were never going to get a DH.
The Cubs are also represented in the way that is showing how they're offensively succeeding. Their outfield is what is performing and helping them win consistently. I'm not saying other people aren't chipping in. We just did an entire first segment making the case for one who is. And then additionally, Matt Boyd appropriately is an all-star.
He is the father that stepped up, as we have reminded
he's
you many times.
He's not the stepfather. He's the father.
He's the father who has stepped up. And here on Raheem and Harris, we are taking that with us for the rest of the season, for the rest of his two-year contract, and maybe even beyond that if he gets some type of extension.
Also, I saw that moved over to Twitter. Like somebody did a graphic with Matt Boyd wearing that shirt, I believe. So I'm not.
I like that.
I like that it's at least gaining steam. Like I don't need to be attributed. Like, the listeners don't need to be. Like, you guys actually are the ones who picked it up and ran with it. But the point is, we're not here to gatekeep. We're here to share information and have fun. So,
all right, Daddy Gang.
So I don't even know where to begin with that.
No,
but listen, when Alex Cooper said that.
Alice Cooper?
Alex Cooper.
Feed my Frankenstein?
No, listen. When she said that before she started her...
Man, Alice has changed quite a bit.
Her very interesting rendition of the seventh inning stretch, made strictly, obviously, for social media purposes and TikTok. When she did that, the first thought in my mind is, oh, she's acknowledging all the Matthew Boyd fans in the house on a night in which Matthew Boyd is pitching. That was my first thought.
Yeah, I'm fine with that and not references to Chris Ranji. That's better.
Oh, because, okay, yeah. Yeah.
I just want to race, Daddy.
Or Dale Earnhardt.
Oh, wow.
That's the quote from the movie 3. Do you remember that?
It came out on ESPN
about 15 years ago.
That was a long time ago.
Maybe 20 years ago.
No, I don't remember.
And that's what he says. He's like, I just want to race, Daddy.
Layla, go ahead. Call me Daddy.
No. But at least we have the Alex Cooper soundbite to play.
The Daddy Gang works perfectly for all the Matthew Boyd fans.
All right, Daddy Gang.
Yeah, and if you're talking to the camera, then that is the case. I've just never heard anybody be that booed for singing the seventh inning stretch. That's what I came away from it with.
Did she deserve it?
Yes.
Thousands
yes, Robbie.
Of people said yes. It's conducting the seventh inning stretch.
I was like, so happy sang, of Cubs fans
we
doing
sang
that.
Two fans. Like, I don't care about the camera being on me. The camera's on me all the time, whether or not I want it to be.
I think it was the blatant lack of acknowledgement of fans, plus the way she started that song. Those two things.
Well, let's be clear. When you say the blatant lack of acknowledgement to the fans, you mean she didn't even face the fans
right.
because
and
she
also,
was doing this for like a like, video,
hey, you're
like
not
for social
at,
media.
You're not at the Daddy Gang convention. You're at the Cubs game.
And she turned her back to Pat Hughes. She didn't even acknowledge Pat Hughes. That's the biggest thing that she did wrong.
What is this? 224. I can't wait to see how L-E-Y-L-A tries to define that terrible act. Only because they're, T-H-I-R, women too. Well, we're talking about it right now.
Oh, wait. They're saying because you're a woman, you can't criticize other women. Is that the
Yeah,
the,
a lot
the notion?
Of a lot of people say
Can
that.
Can I criticize their spelling and their difficulty
they think
dealing
they're
with...
trying to rile me up or something?
Homophones are tough. I get it. There. There's a lot of different ways you can go with there.
It's the same texter every time. We've blocked like 75 of his numbers and he thinks he's being slick.
Oh, you can just create a new number on, what is that, WhatsApp?
Google Voice, too. Like, it's so sad because like we don't keep track of that stuff. Like, sit down. Yeah, you're actually not talking to the Daddy Gang. You're talking to the Cubs fans. But I'm familiar with the podcast.
Maybe she was addressing because... The sad yet great thing about her rendition is it wasn't on marquee, so it wasn't televised. It was just on social media and in the ballpark.
But she's laughing all the way to the bank. I think she's cool.
Oh, yeah, she's
I think
got
she's
money.
Cool with the consequences of what happened.
I didn't know anything about her beforehand, but now I know, yes, she is rich. She is wealthy.
Yeah, I mean, history making in the podcast.
Yes. I 847, the Layla Slanders would be very upset if they could read.
I don't know how to explain this to you, but there's a lot of people who A, either lie about what I say to make up stuff to feel better about themselves, like that example, or they just like think that saying stuff like that is going to make me mad. No, it just makes you look strange.
847, I'm Sox fan and even thought that stretch was SMH. That's all caps, shaking my head. Imagine that was someone's first game at that, and that moment was just a joke for
her. But see, here's my
issue.
Sean and Charlotte. We're now talking about that instead of, say, Suzuki's production in an incredible National League.
All right, Daddy Gang.
So, like, for me, I'd rather be talking about the guys who step up than the person who, A, is laughing all the way to the bank, and B, has also created her own obvious space in media.
Like, she got us to talk about
it,
right?
I'm just a big there's room for everybody person, so that's how I feel about it. But yeah, that you're singing with the fans. Like, to me, it's about being with the fans. But that's my own take. So yeah. But I have a lot less money than she does. Listen, millions less, actually.
Credit to her. In a capitalistic society, she has worked the system successfully. I'm still trying to figure this system out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and also, it's kind of like parking. That's what I said earlier about the stretch. There's always going to be somebody who does it better than you, and there's always going to be somebody who does it worse. That's all I care about.
Okay, I'm with that.
Yep. So that's how I feel. We've got more baseball to discuss here on Rahimi and Harris on The Score. A statement made about not only somebody who I'm glad they're at the big league level now, but also the plan and what happens for the White Sox future. And this arguably probably the most pivotal month of their season. That is next on Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Broken bat, a flare to left field. Montgomery, will he get there? Oh, what a catch! In his big league debut, you see what Colson Montgomery can do. Welcome to the show.
That was John Shriffin on CHSN welcoming Colson Montgomery, who I was very glad to see get the call up. My word, he has had a season so far, and he just got here. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score. Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, and you, as we continue talking about baseball, but the saga of Colson Montgomery, I feel like was a play in three acts or a movie or a miniseries. One of the things, when you consider how he was talked about in spring training, he then struggles mightily. He gets injured, as we know, there's a setback.
Arizona.
The expectation is in AAA. Then suddenly he's going to Arizona to try to get his swing right. And then, surprise, he's here now. That was a long way to go and actually not a short time to get there. It felt like a long time to get there, but happy to see. And at least not only is he here, but the expectation is that he should get regular playing time. That's the next piece of this, is trying to figure out how he gets folded into this team. How they want him to develop his profile, and then also what the White Sox plan is for him.
Yeah, I think they played this perfectly. They needed to bring him up. He was hot. Better to do it on the road than at home, where there's going to be obviously a media swarm, as there was yesterday, I'm sure.
Made his home debut yesterday. Yeah, it was the only game in town, as we know.
But what better environment to bring somebody up with minor league size crowds, if you will. Although 4th of July weekend, they probably have bigger crowds. But Colorado, the worst team in baseball. Coors Field, we know how the air plays up there. It's just a flawless execution by Cubs front office and management to get that done. White Sox front office and management to get that done. I'm proud of them for...
I, too, credit the Cubs with calling up Colson Montgomery.
Well, kidding. Listen, I've been very critical of Chris Getz and the White Sox in a lot of different areas over the last couple of seasons. But they got this right. And so when flowers are due, they're due. Now, I can't give Colson Montgomery all the flowers yet. It's been four games. But I do like the start that he's gotten off to.
I think there are a couple of things at play for me here. Is number one, there's the risk-reward for the individual. Number two, there's the risk-reward for giving opportunities to that individual relative to the expectation for the team. The expectation for the White Sox is not record-based right now.
No.
So that said, go ahead. If you can possibly develop a core of players and have them come online and at least know each other, when in the last run the Sox tried to make, all we ever talked about was how the core of players never got to play together because of injury. I'm okay with seeing this play out in real time at the big league level. That has always been my desire. Especially in a season where there's not a lot on the line. That makes life a lot easier. Does losing stink? Yes, absolutely. No team wants to. Players aren't wired to tank. However, I think when there's not as much pressure, let people be and learn. It is okay. What is the risk? Low.
Well, I think for me, I was happy with everything that's happened to this point, but then I heard something very concerning yesterday from the manager, Will Venable. As you know, Chase Meidroth has been the everyday shortstop to this point, but now Colson Montgomery's here. So you're thinking, okay, they'll slide Chase Meidroth over to second base. That is your double play combo of the future. But hold up, pump the brakes, because Will Venable is saying now that they're going to split time at shortstop.
As far as these first few games for Colson, I think, you know, to get him on board and comfortable with this first stretch, I think it is important for him to spend some time at just short. And at the same time, knowing Chase, that we want him to play all over the field, and that, you know, having him at short is going to be something that's important as well. So, you know, for the next few days, I think it'll be mostly Colson at short, but you'll see Chase over there soon.
I'm a little concerned with that. Why not just let that man... That's the position he was drafted at. That's the position he was brought up as. Let that man do shortstop until he proves he cannot do shortstop. And so far, guess what? He's proving he can do shortstop.
Yeah, that was a question for me too, because the goal ultimately is what you just said. You want Meidroth at second. You want Montgomery at short. So why would you even mix it up? I want to hear the reasoning behind that. And usually knowing Will Venable, there is one. Let's also hear Chris Getz talk about Montgomery being called up and getting the opportunity.
I'm really proud of him. You know, we talked, you know, now it was months ago. You know, I gave him a call and just to kind of do a little check-in. And, you know, he's going through it. He was really struggling. And I said, hey, we're going to figure this out. You're going to figure this out. You just can't quit. And he goes, I'm not going to quit. And he didn't. Obviously, it's well documented that he went to Arizona, put the work in, came back, and you know, got it back together. And you know, he was swinging really well. And then now to have him back with the big league up with the big league club and starting in Colorado, he looked very comfortable on both sides of the ball. And you know, and you know, hopefully he continues. But you know, we believe in the player, we believe in the person, and you know, most importantly, he deserves the credit. But it's a big deal for this organization.
It is a big deal for the organization, Chris Getz. This is Raheemy and Harris on The Score as we continue to talk about Colson Montgomery being called up and last night making his home debut. Did you also catch the nugget from Burke Fletcher on the CHSN broadcast about who he's still living in Indiana right now? That's a commute.
That is more than a hike.
Colson Montgomery has to commute like David Haw to get to work.
It's a better commute, though, than if he was playing at Wrigley. Like, Indiana is a lot closer to the South Side.
It's a lot of tolls that he has to pay.
He's had to pay a share, hasn't he?
He's been tolled all the way to Major Leagues.
Metaphorically, this year,
the toll
he has
on
had
the road and
tolls.
On his mental, exactly.
But can we get Colson Montgomery an Airbnb or something?
That should
they
be
can't afford an Airbnb.
Doable, but I mean...
There's some cute places in Bridgeport by Buffalo Wings and Rings. I saw them.
I don't know how
they're
much...
Cute. I used to live right there, yeah.
They're walkable. You can get some wings and rings. I feel like a lot of things can happen there. Maybe some tempura cauliflower if you're feeling, you know, like mixing it up.
I'm not sure how much of his signing bonus money he has left over, but you know the wages aren't as meager as they used to be in the minors, but they're pretty low. But now he's on a major league salary, although it's the minimum. So it'll be interesting to see how long it takes him to move to the South Side.
The point is, welcome, Colson Montgomery. I'm glad you're here. Also, Chase Meidroth, even in the department of Chase Meidroth, usually has a dirty uniform. Yesterday was egregious, was it not? He was basically wearing the infield on his body.
I'm okay with it.
That's his style. I don't knock it.
He wants to let you know what type of player he is from jump, and he wastes no time some days.
But regardless, we are talking about the White Sox future, and for that, I am happy. And grateful. Amen.
A lot more positive right now than it was this time last year is all I can say about that.
Absolutely. Let's talk some more baseball next. You know why?
Do we have a guest?
We do. We have our weekly discussion with Ian Happ. A lot to discuss, not only on his podcast. He's got some projects he is working on as well. And I want to get his thoughts on some All-Star stuff.
I love that.
So let's do it next. Ian Happ with Rahimi and Harris and you on The Score.